Welcome to Enlightenment of Change with Connie Whitman of Whitman & Associates. Here's Connie.
Welcome to Enlightenment of Change on webtalkradio.com. I'm your host, Connie Whitman. I want to thank you for joining us today. Now, as you listen to the show, you know, my guests and I, we get that word change, whatever it means to you or whatever aspect of your life you're looking to change, it isn't always so easy. So for me to help you on your journey of change, in the show notes, you'll find my communication style assessment. I have found in the decades that I've been in business and decades that I've been working, you know, since graduating college, when we are navigating change, I think communication skills or our communication aptitude is probably pretty darn important. So in the show notes, my communication style assessment, my gift to you, you'll get two reports. One, just your natural superpowers, how your message is received. Important to know, we want to lean into that and leverage, right? Always build on strength. Flip side, lowest score, typically a blind spot. So you'll get that report as well. For me, I think that might be the more important report because your message might be landing differently than you're anticipating with people who just communicate opposite than we do. So again, link is in the show notes, my gift to you. Now, to set the stage for my conversation with my guest today, the motivational quote is by BKS Iyengar. I probably said that long, but BKS says, health is a state of complete harmony of the body, mind, and spirit. When one is free from physical disabilities and mental distractions, the gates of the soul open. Wow. Now, I just love that quote. And I know I changed my habits probably definitely over the past 20 years where I have incorporated that mind, body, spirit element to my daily behaviors, practices, etc. I don't want to just survive in my life and business. I want to thrive. And that has helped me for sure. Now, it took me a long time to consider, and I don't know if most of you feel this way, like self-care as a necessity, I used to view it as a luxury. Now, initially, I thought, well, taking time for myself, it was selfish. I felt like I was letting all the people down around me, my clients, my family, myself, right, all the time. So we are all works. So what I've learned is we're works in progress, man, and every day is a journey. So we need to keep reiterating to build the best habits for ourselves in order to sustain that healthy, happy, long life. So who is my amazing guest today that we're going to talk about long lives and happy long lives? Let me rephrase that. My guest is Dr. Greg Hammer. Dr. Greg is back for his second debut on the show. And Greg's book, Gain Without Pain, The Happiness Handbook for Healthcare Professional, beyond that, focuses on the four pillars of Dr. Hammer's meditation methodology called gratitude, acceptance, intention, and non-judgment to promote overall well-being and harmony between the mind and body. So please help me welcome back for the second time, Dr. Greg, to the show. Greg, thanks for being on.
Great to see you again, Connie.
Yeah, same here. So everyone, just for your ease, I will post Greg and my other show in the show notes for you, where we really dig into about his book, the foundation of his book, and those four meditation methodologies of gratitude, acceptance, intention, and non-judgment. So go back and listen to that one. It'll really set the stage for we're kind of elevating the conversation today, right, Greg? We're going to kind of pump up the volume a little bit.
Sure. I'm game.
I know you are, my friend. So here's my first question, again, to build on what we did last time. But what does optimizing longevity, what does that mean to you? So we could define it and set the stage for everybody today.
Yes. Well, I think, you know, longevity obviously means living a long time. Nobody wants to live a long time if they're chronically ill or depressed. That would make a long life a punishment. So we can talk about health span, that is living a long, healthy, and hopefully happy life. And I think that's an excellent goal. I think that the science of longevity or health span science is really progressing. And there are lots of exciting new discoveries in terms of how we can make ourselves healthier and also live a longer life. With good health and happiness.
Yeah, right. Feeling needed. And I don't remember the doctor's name. I think we mentioned it in the last episode, but he called it the Blue Zone, where he traveled across the world for people who lived to over 100. They were centenarians. And he looked to see if there was commonality of why not only were they over 100, but they looked like they were maybe 75. They were jumping on and off horses, and he found some commonalities. Do you use that as part of your methodology as well, foundationally?
Well, yes, the blue zones are areas in the world that are widely recognized where there is an excess number of centenarians compared to the rest of the world. So yeah. Those are in Loma Linda, California, Okinawa, area of Greece, Italy, and there are a couple of others. I think there are around seven altogether. And yes, it's important if we're interested in longevity to look at people who live a long time. So the centenarians in those blue zones have in common their diet. They generally have what's called a Mediterranean diet. It's very low in sugar and refined foods and processed carbohydrates in particular and other processed foods. It's high in fruits and vegetables and often fish. So the fish oils are very important. The fish itself is an important source of protein. So these people tend to have generally a plant-based diet with fish being added and very little in the way of the modern refined, sugary, fatty, so-called comfort food cuisine. And then, so that's their diet. They tend to be pretty physically active. So they do tend to get ongoing exercise, even at an advanced age. They tend to sleep well, get enough sleep. If they have to take a siesta in the afternoon, they do. And then there's sort of the mental side of it. Those are some physical aspects related to sleep, exercise, and nutrition in particular. But also kind of spiritually, they tend to be in family structures that revere the elderly.
Yes.
And recognize the wisdom of their elders. And so these centenarians are very engaged in their community. They're very engaged in their families, as opposed to what we often see throughout the rest of the United States, which is that as we age, we are often perhaps cast aside. And then there's this sort of downhill spiral of becoming a bit more isolated, maybe a bit depressed. When we're depressed, we tend to be less active, less focused on our personal health and wellness. So yes, I think those blue zones are revealing in that they reveal certain attributes of lifestyle of those who tend to live a long time in their communities, and we can learn a lot from them.
Yeah, and I know you believe in that premise, you know, the whole mind, body, spirit. And I think I shared in the last show, and I've shared it before, you know, my dad is 93 and a half, still lives independently, can't drive, right? Because he can't see very well, he can't hear very well. But he's active. You know, we had my son's girlfriend's family over for dinner, and they all speak Italian. They come from, it's so cute. They all come from Italy and Calabria in the province, but their little towns were about 20 miles apart, or give or take. So my dad came here when he was 20, and Sabrina's mom came here when she was, I guess, like 15. So there's that kinship, and they speak Italian. So my dad enjoys it because he gets to speak Italian with them. So we include him in things, you know, and I just want to share the importance. My dad gets in about 6,000 steps a day. Either they go to the park, he and his sisters, who are also elders, they go walking every day. They cook for each other, where they make homemade bread, homemade pasta. So they get a better level of flour. So it's not as processed. The white flour, they use this Italian flour. So again, they still make their own food. My dad cooks, they cook for each other because now they're all single, right? All their spouses have passed on. but they walk, they eat. And I think that element of family, of community, you know, because we include my dad with everything. He's relevant. He, you know, my kids are 24 and 27, Greg, and they say to me after we leave my dad, they go, you know, he's really smart. I really have great conversations with grandpa. It's not like, oh, I gotta go see grandpa. They engage with him, but he engages back. Hey, how's work? My dad owned his own business forever. Hey, what did you say to your boss? Did you get that promotion? He remembers because he still has his faculties. We're very blessed. But I think it comes back to that Italian heritage of eating and moving. I mean, he was moving. He was working the farm when he was 5 years old, right? I mean, they don't know any differently, which I think is part of that whole centenarian kind of vibe. So it's real. I mean, this stuff worked. You know, my dad, he's amazing, but I don't think he's, I mean, I think he's, of course, amazing. And when you talk about centenarians in these areas, I can see why he's still functioning at this high level. Sure, he shuffles and he moves slowly, but he's still functioning and enjoying life at the same time, which is really important, right?
Yeah, well, that's wonderful to hear. I think he has those essential characteristics in common with the centenarians in the blue zones that are often discussed when the issue is longevity. So kudos to him and to the rest of the family, his siblings for being mutually supportive. That's huge.
Yeah. It's their own little community, right?
Yeah.
Tell us, Greg, what do you do like in your day-to-day life that you feel is optimizing your longevity as you go through life?
Well, it comes down to sleep, exercise, nutrition, and I guess nutrition, we can include supplements and now even drugs that promote longevity. And then there's the spiritual aspect of, for me, the GAIN practice, gratitude, acceptance, intention, non-judgment. So sleep, exercise, nutrition, I do try to focus on my sleep hygiene. For example, I used to have a cup of coffee after lunch because I tend to sag like many of us do after we eat midday. And then, you know, I wasn't sleeping that well, and being a scientist and having done a lot of research in pharmacology, I thought about, well, I wonder if that afternoon cup of coffee is hurting me, and the active ingredient that tends to activate us is caffeine, of course. Caffeine has a pretty long half-life of 5 or 6 hours. That means that the blood level as a peak after we have a cup of coffee is reduced by 50% 5 or 6 hours later. So let's kind of see what that means. So you have a cup of coffee at 1 o'clock, maybe 100 to 150 milligrams of caffeine. You get a peak level in the bloodstream, maybe 30 to 45 minutes later. And then let's say 5 hours after that, let's say around 7 o'clock, the blood concentration of caffeine is reduced by 50%. So in fact, equivalent to having half of that cup of coffee at 7 o'clock or 6:30.
Wow.
And equivalent to having another quarter cup of coffee around midnight. So that would certainly keep me up because I'm pretty sensitive to caffeine. So I cut out that afternoon cup of coffee and my sleep improved almost right away. So, you know, sleep hygiene includes not having caffeine if you're sensitive to it, really beyond the morning, I would say. Not eating or drinking alcohol proximate to the time of going to sleep. Maybe trying to have a cool, dark room. People talk about blue light exposure because blue light activates our circadian rhythm in favor of being awake. And so the blue light coming from our phones, our tablets, our laptops, television, computers is all arousing, if you will, and may interfere with sleep. The blue light blocking glasses, from what I've read, are not that effective. So that's another element of good sleep hygiene, is really avoiding screen time, maybe an hour or so, maybe two before going to sleep, maybe reading a book instead. So there's a number of very simple things with regard to sleep hygiene. Exercise, you know, the key principle is that some is better than none. So for people who are working at home, you know, get up every hour or two and go for a power walk for 5 or 10 minutes.
Yeah.
But try to do more vigorous exercise. Generally, more is better up to a point. People who run these, you know, ultra marathons or run over, let's say 100 miles a week, which not very many people are doing, but then actually running can have negative health effects. But in general, incorporating aerobic or cardio exercise, some resistance training, some core training, and as we get older, balance in particular, because falls tend to be a significant initiating factor for a downhill course. People in their 70s and 80s fall, they break a bone like a hip, and then they have surgery and they're never quite the same. I think many of us have had people in our families like that. So the various kinds of exercise are very important. And of course, what we eat and when we eat is key. So again, looking at these centenarians and excuse me, the Mediterranean diet, healthy oils, for the Italians, it's a lot of olive oil. Olive oil and fish oil are rich in omega-3s, which are very healthy. But staying pretty much away from meat and poultry, once in a while, it's okay. But moving toward a more plant-based diet, I would say, for all the healthy phytochemicals and fiber, which is so important to the gut microbiome. I mean, each of these concepts really could be an hour or two discussion in
You
themselves,
said it,
but the importance of the gut microbiome, for example. So it's having a healthy diet, avoiding sugary and even starchy foods. You mentioned bread, and they get Italian flour. So the flour that we have in the U.S. is highly processed. In fact, the wheat has been sort of hybridized away from having a lot of the healthy elements, even whole wheat, compared to, say, the wheat that your father and his siblings got in Italy, or maybe they still get flour from Italy. So, I recommend actually that people consider continuous glucose monitoring occasionally. So I have a monitor on right now. It's used by diabetics, but even if you're not diabetic or pre-diabetic, you need a prescription from a physician, but these just get applied with a very simple device, and you sync the device with your phone so you can actually track your blood sugar continuously and learn what foods really cause a spike in blood sugar. So this is mine. I don't know if you can see that, but I just had my first little meal of the day since I generally eat between 11 and 7. 11 a.m. and 7 p.m., and it's 11:21 here on the West Coast. My blood sugar went up from just under 100 to 129. But monitoring is good because then you find out what foods really spike your blood sugar. And I could say that white rice and white bread certainly spike mine much more than brown rice, for example. I don't really eat much bread. So that's important. And then when you eat, this idea of intermittent fasting, which I used to think was kind of really unproven benefit, but limiting the, there's a number of different approaches to intermittent fasting. The one that I embrace is generally, as I said, eating between 11 a.m. and 7 p.m. Excuse me, then I'm fasting for 16 hours a day. And that puts a little bit of stress on your metabolism, which ends up having a lot of benefit. So there's something called hormesis, which is a mild stress in a number of areas on your metabolism and other areas of your health that actually are beneficial because they stimulate your cellular activity to turn inward and kind of do a lot of repair, cleaning up free radicals and DNA fragments and so on that might cause trouble, as opposed to focusing on growth. So when things are plentiful, our cells want to grow and divide. When things are restricted, for example, when nutrients are limited for that 16 hours in a day, our cellular activity is more focused on looking inward and repairing. It's kind of like when, in the housing market, the price of housing is very high, then we turn inward and fix up the house that we have. So intermittent fasting actually triggers, it's a hormetic trigger, so it does sort of tell our cells to start to do repair inside rather than growing and dividing. So sleep, exercise, nutrition, intermittent fasting is great. Supplements, I mean, a lot of the hype on various supplements, even vitamins, is overblown. It's a huge industry. But we certainly don't want to have vitamin deficiencies. And so many people, as we get older, we don't absorb B12 as well as we did when we were younger.
Yep.
And so it's important to have maybe a B12 supplement, vitamin D also. You know, yep. We're told that the sun is not healthy for us. And in fact, too much UV radiation is not good for us. But sunlight is essential
necessary
for our ability mm-hmm. to synthesize vitamin D.
Mm-hmm.
So taking a supplement, unless you live, you know, in the tropics and walk around with a t-shirt and shorts outside a lot, taking vitamin D supplements. So those are two drugs that are supplements, rather two vitamins, vitamin D and B12, that I think probably should be supplemented, as well as sort of maybe a multivitamin. But as far as taking lots of a particular vitamin, there's really no scientific basis for doing that. I mentioned actually drugs. There's a couple of drugs that have been studied pretty extensively for their longevity effects. One is metformin. Metformin is an oral medication that tends to lower blood sugar. It's taken by type 2 diabetics.
Hmm.
And epidemiologic studies show that type 2 diabetics taking metformin tended to live a long time.
Interesting.
There's still some debate about this, but I take metformin and I monitor my blood sugar just to make sure that metformin's not making it too low. But it probably induces a little bit of this hormesis, this metabolic stress, which ends up, again, having our cells focus on repair rather than growth. Another drug that has got a lot of attention is called rapamycin. It comes from a fungus that was discovered on Easter Island, which the natives call Rapa Nui. And so the fungus, the material that's produced by the fungus is called rapamycin. And rapamycin downregulates or tends to limit the activity of a receptor called mTOR, which is the mammalian target of rapamycin. It's actually named after rapamycin. And mTOR, especially mTOR subtype 1, is very pro-inflammatory. So if you take people with organ transplants historically took high doses of rapamycin on a daily basis to suppress their immune response so they didn't reject the organs. But there's increasing evidence that taking rapamycin in a low dose intermittently, like once a week, tamps down mTOR1 and has anti-inflammatory effects. And inflammation is one of the causes of aging.
Yeah.
And all four of the diseases associated with aging are the categories being cardiovascular disease, metabolic syndrome, which is obesity and type 2 diabetes, essentially, neurodegenerative disease, dementia, and also cancer. So those four diseases are really the diseases of aging, and aging itself by many is in longevity science is being considered a disease. So drugs like metformin and rapamycin may be a benefit, and certain supplements that aren't vitamins also seem to have a beneficial effect on aging and these four chronic diseases. And we could talk about those, but they include something called NAD and its precursors, and other drugs like fisetin and quercetin that are found in colorful fruits and vegetables. Again, another reason to eat lots of those and not a lot of meat. So sleep, exercise, nutrition, and then supplements, vitamins and other supplements, and possibly drugs, I think are all really being looked at for living a long, healthy life. And then with regard to happiness, we can talk about the gain elements.
Yeah, I just want to comment on a couple of things, and I didn't want to stop you because they're all connected, what you just said, and it was important. But the first thing was sleep hygiene. I like the word hygiene with that because we're known, especially in the United States and definitely on the East Coast where I am, it's the hustle, right? It's the hustle culture where we're just go, 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 pedal to the metal, and sleep becomes, I could sleep when I'm dead. You know, I've heard people say that. So sleep hygiene, I like that. Just like we shower every day, we really need to take the time with sleep. I too am very susceptible to caffeine. I have a cup of coffee in the morning and I'm done. If I have any caffeine after 12 p.m., I know it affects my sleep. So if we go out somewhere, I always say, oh, I can't have dessert because that sugar or that chocolate, I know I'll be Ricochet Rabbit in bed all night. It's too much for me at the end of the day. So I totally understood that. The other thing is, you talked about supplements. I do take supplements. I personally, I go to a holistic doctor. We do my blood work twice a year so that we could see obviously hormonal levels as I age and what effect that's having, but also my vitamin D. Like in the summer, we have a shore house. So I'm at the beach a lot. We're outside a lot. We're very active, right? Walking or whatever. I have to lower my dosage of vitamin D, but during the winter, I take a vitamin D supplement daily for just that reason. The other question I had with the supplement piece, right? So we kind of monitor. So she says, all right, it's time to slow down on the vitamin D. If my vitamin D after I had the COVID shot, that affected me very poorly personally. And my vitamin D was non-existent, where for about 20 years, I was in control of it. I had none and I felt it. I went to her and I said, I am not right. My body, because you get in tune with your body when you're on supplements, when you're off supplements. I don't know what's wrong. As soon as we do the blood work, she's like, you are right. And I felt sluggish. I was out of it. My vitamin D was zero, which was shocking because for 20 years, right, we were really managing it. So again, different things happen in our lives, aging, whatever, stress, different levels of stress. You have to monitor it. And then the last thing I wanted to comment was the intermittent fasting. I too do that as well. I don't have a huge appetite. So the intermittent fasting works for me in that small period of time. Plus I sleep better at night. But the two things I wanted to say about the intermittent fasting, and I forget the first one. The second was you mentioned with all, dementia. No, God, don't even say that word. I didn't want to put that in the universe. I should have written it down. I wrote down the hygiene, the sleep hygiene, but the intermittent fasting with our, I know what I wanted to say. You said that by forcing it to go within to do the repairs, it's almost like meditation. We're the hustle generation, right? Where we're go, go, go. If you never pause to reflect on, was that a good day? Was I happy? You know, did I do things because I felt I had to? Why do I feel that way, right? All of that self-reflection, if we don't carve it into our day, Greg, I feel like we don't do it. It sounds like that intermittent fasting has that same effect where it's like pause. Let your body go internally and do what it knows to do or knows it should be doing for a healthy outcome. But if we're always grazing and eating and we never stop, we lose that component as well. So all of these pieces that you're talking about, they're separate and they're not. They're all woo together. And then the last question I have is the inflammation in our body. I know that's a big one. The turmeric, am I saying that correctly? No. I take that and that supposedly helps with the inflammation of the body. Was I misguided on that?
No, it has been attributed accordingly. You're correct. I mean, there's a lot of foods and even herbs and spices that have anti-inflammatory and antioxidative stress. So things that are antioxidants like vitamin C, some of the other vitamins, actually lots of different foods are antioxidants. And oxidative stress, as I mentioned briefly, is one of the triggers for cellular degeneration and aging. So why is that? What is that all about? Well, exposure to even, let's say, too much oxygen. Okay, so I'm very, it's part of my intensive care practice and my anesthesia practice too, but in the intensive care unit, it's important not to give patients too much oxygen. Mm-hmm. Oxygen, we're adapted to breathe air, which is about 21% oxygen. If we are breathing supplemental oxygen for long periods of time, we are more prone to oxidative injury. But there's a lot of cellular processes that also produce oxidative stresses. So we want to have the ability to buffer these oxidative stresses, and that's where antioxidants come in. So oxidative stress, even internal mechanisms of our cellular activity, produce what's called reactive oxygen species, like free radicals. Free radicals damage our DNA. Remember that, you know, when our cells are dividing, so you have a, you know, you have a cut on your skin, your skin cells and the cells underneath your skin are going to be stimulated to replicate to heal that wound, right? So, one cell is making two cells are making four cells until that wound is healed. So when cells divide that way, which is essential for our health, the DNA that's coding activities within the cell has to replicate. So you've got one copy of DNA in one cell, let's say simplistically. When that cell is going to divide into two cells and heal your wound, the DNA has to replicate. So if the DNA is damaged, it's not going to replicate properly, right? What damages DNA? Things like ultraviolet light, for example. That's why you should be a little bit careful about spending too much time outside without, you certainly want to wear sunscreen, but ultraviolet light damages DNA, and reactive oxygen species, i.e. free radicals, damage DNA. So you want to be able to scavenge those free radicals or reactive oxygen species with antioxidants. So you want your cells to have enough antioxidant activity to get rid of these free radicals before they damage your DNA, your genetic material. So there are a lot of foods that have antioxidant activity. But, you know, everything is a balance. Like many people think that vitamin C, which is an antioxidant, the more is better. That's kind of the American way. But actually, there's no real scientific evidence that taking lots and lots and lots of vitamin C gives you lots and lots and lots of antioxidant activity that prevents damage to your DNA and other pro-aging phenomena. So that's why I say I think vitamins D and B12 are important. You can measure them.
Yeah.
And when they're low, replace them. They can both be taken orally. A lot of people think you need B12 by injection. Well, a few of us don't absorb it well, so you might be taking a lot of B12 and your level might be low, and then you might need IM injections, but that's very, very uncommon. So that's sort of the antioxidant thing, just in a nutshell. And turmeric and, you know, lots of other foods, citrus foods, for example, tomatoes, oranges, lemons, limes, they have vitamin C, they have antioxidant activity. Leafy green vegetables, broccoli, kale, you know, even arugula and other leafy vegetables, they have antioxidant activity. So it's important up to a point beyond which it doesn't seem to add much.
Yeah. The thing is, we have to know our body, like you're monitoring, right? So we have to know our bodies and what works. Like I said, I know when I'm fatigued and I know when something's off. We do the blood work. Sure enough, it's off because you become in tune. You're monitoring yourself to some extent. And I just want to comment the vitamin D. I used to take a supplement and I didn't move. And every time we did the blood work, she's like, this was 20 years ago. Now there's in New Jersey, we have a pharmacy that compounds specific for, in my case, I put the vitamin D under my, it's a supplement and I just put it under my tongue. And for some reason that worked for me. My absorption went up where other supplements I could take regular pills, you know, orally, and it works for me. Vitamin D didn't. And I had adrenal fatigue. So I take DHEA, which is another one. It works. I have to be on it, but I have to take that under the tongue and boom, all of a sudden I started absorbing it. So there's so many non-invasive ways other than, like you were saying, the syringe. We could do things under our tongue. It just gets into our bloodstream a little bit, I think, more rapidly than going through the whole digestive tract. So again, really, really talk to your doctor about this because there's so many supplements, but you have to know what is your body's deficiency. And the other thing I just wanted to comment on, my dad has stage 1 diabetes, I think it's called. But the doctor, he's hysterical because he knows my dad is very disciplined. So my dad watches. He doesn't eat sugar. He watches the bread. If it's not his own bread, only calandras because they have three ingredients. So he is very mindful of everything he puts in his mouth. So probably for the past 20 years, he has not been on any diabetic medication because he's able to control it through the diet because the doctor worked with him because he knows my dad's disciplined. He didn't say, let's put you on the medicine. My dad's like, well, can I try with my diet? And sure enough, just like you said, being mindful of it, he knows what works for his body. So I think we have to, and my doctor, I've been working with her for 20 years. So that's why, Greg, I like the way you talk about things because it's not, oh, you need these supplements. Everybody needs these supplements. Do you? You don't know. Where do you live in the world? What is your diet like? You might be eating enough that you don't need a supplement because you're getting through natural foods, right? The medicines or the good stuff that our body craves and needs to survive. We are out of time. We went way over, but this was, it's so fascinating.
We just scratched the surface, Connie.
Oh my God, Greg, it's crazy because here's my take on all of this. We all want to live longer. Great. But I have to tell you, if I'm in a wheelchair or I don't have my cognitive abilities or I'm a burden on my family to live to hit 100, I don't want that. To me, that's a burden. That's not thriving. We want to live longer. That's great objective. But I think we all want to live from the thriving component. So we really do have the power to do that if we take the time to and then fill in the blank. But we have to start somewhere. And I think we have to start to examine, am I exercising enough? And one more quick thing. As I'm aging, I'm, you know, well into my 60s now. I started doing about a year ago, I started doing Pilates again. It's low stress on the joints, but I have to tell you, it kicks my butt every time I go because it's very correlated. We do cardio, we do balancing, which is another one. We use weights in it. So it's a culmination of different, every time I go, it's a different class, Greg. It's wonderful. But I walk out of there, I go, holy moly. And I feel it the next day and I've been doing it a year. So I feel like for me at my age, it's doing what I need to do. My muscles are coming back. All of those things. But again, you have to find what's going to work for you because my knees hurt if I do too many squats and stuff. So the Pilates really works and is gentle to my joints personally while also kicking my butt at the end of the day. So I think we have to find what works for us. And when I hear you speak, you share what you do, right? I'm sharing what my dad did and what the combination of the Blue Zone is and all of this. But it's not a one size fits all. And I like that about you because I think that we have to really take the time to pause what's going to work for me, right? So maybe meditation, sitting and doing OM isn't going to work, but maybe going for a walk in the park through the trees and taking a brisk walk. So I'm getting my heart, but I'm also being mindful of the surroundings, listening to the birds. Maybe that's the meditation that works for me. We have to figure out and be very disciplined, but also aware of self and not because it worked for Joe Schmo, it's going to work for me. And that's what I like about your plan. It's about experimentation, playing with these four models that or four pillars that you talk about and then figuring out what is the secret sauce for Connie? What is the secret sauce for Greg? Right. And I think that's an important piece of the puzzle. Anything else you want to comment on before we end?
Well, next time, maybe we'll talk about the gain meditation. Maybe we'll take 3 minutes to do it. The I in gain, by the way, is intention. So we have to be purposeful. We have to have a plan. So we have to identify what we need to do with regard to our sleep, exercise, nutrition, supplements, and we have to identify what we need to do and then have a plan to do it.
That's right.
That's the I in gain, and that's intention, because if we don't have intention and a plan, we just sort of relax into sort of chaos and eating poorly and thinking we can sleep and catch up on the weekends, and that doesn't work. So yes, we have to have a plan.
Yeah, absolutely. I love it. I love it. Buy Greg's book, Everything You Need to Know, or at least good resources from Greg. Go to his website. It's greghammermd.com. I will put it in the show notes so you guys can find him. Check out the website. Buy the book. This is life-changing stuff, guys. And oh, by the way, you start, you know, the other thing I like about you, Greg, it's not like we got to do it all of that right now. Like right now, you got to start. You can't go from 0 to 100 and expect any change to happen. So we have choices, right? But you have to choose to make a move, to make a change, whatever that is, for the people listening to the show. So thank you so much for, you know, clear, concise, options, experimentation, flexibility, like all those things are part of what you do. And the book is a great place for everybody to start to get a vibe of who you are and maybe little things that they could start implementing immediately. So thank you for being on. I always enjoy our conversations for sure.
Likewise, Connie. Great to be with you.
Yeah, same. Thanks again. And I, guys, like I said, I promise I'll put the other show in the show notes. Totally different conversation than what Greg and I talked about today. So you might want to listen to that one. We talked more about the book in that one. And then this one, we kind of dug a little deeper. And as you can see, like Greg said, we've just hit the tip of the iceberg. So, there's so much that goes on. But if you want to have a healthy life where you're thriving and showing up and just living, man, just living from a good perspective, the book might be a great place to start. So again, it's greghammermd.com. Thanks again, Greg. Always a joy to hang out with you, my friend.
Likewise, Connie. Take care.
Thank you. Yes, definitely. And I hope you will join me weekly as we question, build, and discover that no matter where you are on your journey of change today we talked about longevity. I hope that it works for you. Again, you've been listening to Enlightenment of Change with me, your host, Connie Whitman, on webtalkradio.com. I am honored to have you on this journey of change with me, and I truly hope that you take my guest recommendations today and apply them. Take one thing that you learned. Buy the book. Try something. Information's a beautiful thing. If you do nothing with it, it's simply information. As soon as you apply it, man, oh man, magic happens on the back end. Thanks again for tuning in. I love you all. I'll see you next week. Have a great week filled with inspiration, change, good change. Let's say good change. Have a great one, everybody. Thanks.